Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Brad Gilmore Show, to the announce table. I know y'all been listening to the Brad Gilmore Show on demand. Y'all heard the old episodes of the announce table. They're too young to be classic, but they're old enough to not be new anymore. You know what I mean? So y'all been listening to the pilot, the CM Punk episode, the Montreal Screwjob, the Streak parts 1 and 2. And now I just figured, since the fans wanted it, I decided it's time to get some new audio for the announce table, and the only person who can help me out with that is on the line with me right now via FaceTime audio, which is my favorite type of audio because it doesn't make any sense. It's FaceTime, except it's audio. It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, welcome back. Y'all are going to love to hear his voice again. Mr. Kyle Hubbard, brother.
Yo, what up?
What's up, man? How have you been?
You know, I've been living large, you know, fucking hanging out with Jay-Z and Beyonce on the run tour. It's been crazy.
I know, man. You're the reason they're getting divorced, right? I know.
Well, hell yeah, yeah.
I heard the rumors. You couldn't help but to get some Beyonce. Well, welcome back to the show, Mr. Hubbard. I mean, it's been a while. I think the last time we recorded anything new was in February.
Damn, for real?
Yeah. So it's been that long. It was right before – it was a couple months before WrestleMania – since the announce table, and I think I've had you on talking wrestling a little bit after that, but man, you know,
yeah, we talked Mania,
which was crazy. While I have you on here, what are your thoughts on the recent special event / pay per view on the WWE Network for only $9.99? By the way, what do you think of SummerSlam?
Dude, I thought it was great. I love SummerSlam. I pretty much love the entire show, to be honest with you. I really like what they did with Brock and Cena. That blew my mind that they basically had a squash match with Lesnar and Cena. Thought it was a really bold move, and I really respect them for doing that. I thought Reigns and Orton was really good. I see people hating on it, but I thought it was great.
I thought it was good. You know, match. I wasn't like happy. I wasn't excited for that match, but I ended up really getting into it and liking it. The Orton and Reigns one.
Yeah. And I think some of the criticisms for Reigns are, you know, they're rooted in a place that's founded. But overall, I think he's a complete package, and he's only going to improve.
Yeah, I think the smarks are already just turning on him. You know what I mean? They're just turning on him because he's the next guy. He's the next guy to dislike.
It's the same people that were hating on Ryback back in the day, but now they all love Ryback.
Exactly. You know, it's these people.
Smarks.
I hate them all. Anyway,
including ourselves.
But man, you know, I enjoyed SummerSlam. You were about to say something about the lumberjack match.
The lumberjack match was really cool. I mean, pretty much there was no weak match. Even the women's matches were very entertaining. So one of the best events in a long time. Well, since WrestleMania, I should say.
Do you think it was better than WrestleMania?
No, definitely not.
Definitely not. I see a lot of people saying it was better than Mania. So, I wanted to get your.
No, I disagree
on that.
I disagree with that.
I was happy
because I mean the main event. Yeah, I'm sorry, but I was just gonna say that the main event for Mania was amazing. It was a great wrestling match, and the main event for SummerSlam was great. It was great. It was a great storytelling technique compared to a great wrestling match, and I just feel like, you know, I don't know. I just felt like WrestleMania delivered more on the main event side of things. But I enjoyed both. Look, you know, like 10 out of 10 for both.
I definitely agree with that statement. Two of the best pay-per-views in recent years from WWE. So I was really happy with that. But getting into it, real quick, I want to touch on Brock Lesnar, too. Brock Lesnar destroyed John Cena. I mean, absolutely killed the man at SummerSlam. Is your new WWE World Heavyweight Champion. They gave him the new belt and everything. And what do you think going forward? I mean, he's a part-time guy, I know. He's not going to be on every Monday Night Raw. I mean, how do you feel, though, about Lesnar? He's not going to be there all the time. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I have no problem with it. I think the fact that he will be a rare appearance brings some prestige to the title, kind of makes it a real, real big deal. You know, I really don't have a problem with it. This isn't something I'd want to see all the time.
Yeah.
But for Lesnar's character being like, you know, this just complete dominant force that does whatever he wants, I think him being gone can be worked into the story in a really clever way, and it fits his character, you know, his big fight, prize fighter kind of character that he has going.
Definitely. And, you know, as long as I said this, as long as Paul Heyman's there, it doesn't matter. I mean, Paul Heyman can sell Brock Lesnar for 2 years without ever seeing him having to wrestle.
I agree.
But getting that's too current for the announce table, though, Kyle. We got to jump back in time, in a time machine, 13 years ago to be exact. Right around this time, the Invasion. One of the most vivid memories I have of watching wrestling was the Invasion. And it was right when I first started getting really, 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 really big into it. I mean, I've been watching for a few years, and then all of a sudden, the Invasion happens. It's where WCW and ECW invaded the WWF. And what do you remember about the Invasion, Kyle Hubbard?
Okay, first off, full disclosure, when the Invasion was going down, I wasn't watching, but as Brad Gilmore can attest, I'm a wrestling historian, and with the WWE Network, I've been able to really go back in time and brush up on this topic. So, in retrospect, in what everybody says, which is true, is the biggest takeaway is that the Alliance, Team WCW / ECW, really was lacking in star power.
Yes. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I mean, we'll break down the whole thing in a second, but I just remember, like, if you looked at, like, the final teams, because it all culminated at Survivor Series.
Right.
If you look at the final teams, I mean, it's like no WCW guys except for, like, one true WCW guy, and that was Booker T, was on Team WWF. You know what I mean? Everyone else were WWF superstars who went back and forth to make the Invasion more interesting.
Right.
For those of you who are just kind of fuzzy on what we're all talking about, I'll read what my favorite website's recollection of the Invasion, which is Wikipedia. This is what Wikipedia has to say about the WWF Invasion. The Invasion was a professional wrestling storyline in the World Wrestling Federation, now the WWE, that ran from March to November 2001 and involved stables of wrestlers purporting to represent WCW World Championship Wrestling and Extreme Championship Wrestling, also known as ECW, which merged together to form the Alliance. The Alliance was placed against a stable of wrestlers that represented the WWF. The storyline began shortly after WWF's acquisition of WCW and ECW in March and April 2001, respectively, and concluded in a winner-takes-all match between the Alliance and the WWF at the 2001 Survivor Series. I think the craziest thing that started this whole Invasion angle off was WCW went out of business in 2001. I mean, were you a big WCW guy, right?
Yeah. I was a WCW guy first. When I first got into wrestling, well, I mean, I guess I should say when I first got into wrestling on my own accord.
Yeah.
I was into WCW and because NWO and everything like that, Hulk Hogan, names that I recognized, you know, from when my brother would make me watch wrestling. I was a WCW guy. By this time, though, I mean, by 1999, that would not be the case any longer. But, yeah,
that's where
initially
you jumped
a WCW
ship.
Guy.
I mean, but
yeah, more or less.
What did you think when WCW went out of business? Because I wasn't a WCW guy originally. I would watch every now and then. But since I grew up on WWF, I didn't really know anyone except for Hulk Hogan, you know, at the time in WCW. You know, going back later, there were some moments in WCW history which are just awesome. And there are many moments that are just awful. But what do you think of when WCW went out of business?
You know, it was shocking, really, because, I mean, like, I know for sure that the WCW product was trash at this time. But I guess the thought and the notion of it going out of business completely was just kind of something that I didn't think would ever happen. Just something I didn't really even comprehend. Because, you know, you're younger back then, and you look at something like WCW, and you're like, well, that's just going to be there forever. Why would it not be, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's how you look at WWF, too. I mean, WWE. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
You don't think of it as ever being able to even go out of business, no matter what.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's just something you don't consider. Like, you don't ever consider that WCW is going to be bought out by WWF. Well, you don't consider that WCW is not going to exist, much less be bought out by WWF.
So WCW is going out of business, and they're looking for a buyer. Eric Bischoff came very close to buying the company. But
he did.
But they weren't going to sell him. They weren't going to sell him the television time. He could have the licensing deals, the television. I mean, the video library, all that stuff. But they weren't going to give him the TV time. And Eric Bischoff said himself, "If I don't have TV, I don't have anything." And so, so they made Vince. You know, they made Vince an offer to buy the company. And to Vince McMahon, he's like, "Oh, I get all the tape library. I can make a fortune on that. Let me buy it." So I think he buys it for something. I happen to know. I think it was something under $10 million.
I want to say it was $6 million.
Something. I know it was below $10 million, which to me is bananas. I know, right?
Absolutely, absolutely, dude. That's crazy. I don't even think he could buy TNA for that.
He probably couldn't buy TNA for that, but he bought at one time, which was the number one wrestling promotion in the country for a short period of time. WCW bought it for under $10 million. I know a lot of the wrestlers were like, "Shit, I wish I would have known. We would have bought it." You know what I mean? Like,
right? No, for real. We could have bought it. Fucking own that shit easy.
Yeah, he could have been like, "Oh, $6 mil, no problem." So WCW goes out of business, and I remember watching Monday Night Raw. It was like the Raws leading up until WrestleMania 17 here in Houston. And I remember one day watching Raw, and it starts off with Vince McMahon, and he has a television that has WWF on the top of it and a television that has WCW, like a little nameplate on the top of it. And I was like, "What? That's strange, you know." I at this time, you know, there weren't the wrestling blogs. I mean, at least not to the extent there are now. So I didn't really know, like, the insides, what was going on. So to me, this was all news. And I was like, okay. And then he said something about, you know, Jeff Jarrett, you know, J-E-double-F, whatever. Yeah, he said something like that. He's about to be fired. He pretty much said, "I'm going to fire Jeff Jarrett." And I'm like, "Well, Jeff Jarrett's with WCW." So I didn't know what was going on. And then later on, Vince cuts an amazing promo, by the way, in the middle of the ring on Monday Night Raw, where he's talking about, "You got to grab your competition by the throat, and you got to squeeze the life."
Oh, yeah. Now, he was fucking going in.
I know. And he was like, "How do you beat a billionaire? You become one yourself." And I'm like, "God, this guy is destroying the microphone right now." And he says,
I just want to stop. Vince McMahon was the fucking greatest, dude.
I mean, promo-wise, and even like, he's not like a wrestler, but his matches were always awesome. The most part, dude, you know, his matches were always great.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I can vividly, because I just recently watched this episode of Raw. I watched the Raw
side of
this.
Dude,
that promo that he delivered, the one that you're referring to, is pretty fucking amazing. At least top five Vince McMahon promos, because of how rooted in reality it was, you know?
Give me some stuff he was saying since you watched it earlier. Do you remember any other quotables?
The one that about him coming up and crushing the competition and taking it by its throat is definitely the most memorable thing. I can't give you like a play by play on the quotes, but the emotion that what he delivered was from a genuine place, you could tell.
Well, I mean, imagine all the stuff that he went through when WCW decided to start the Monday Night Wars and put Nitro head to head against Raw on Monday nights at the same time. I mean, just think about all the stuff he went through with Bischoff giving out, you know, stealing all of his top guys and then giving out his results and almost putting him, you know, out of business at one point. And it's just like, to finally say, "Well, guess what? I won. I beat Ted Turner. I beat Eric Bischoff." I'm sure that was probably a really happy day in the life of Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
It's got to be top five, at least.
It's got to be top five, at least. It probably goes like the birth. It probably goes like the birth of Stephanie, the birth of Shane,
birth of Stephanie. Okay. Triple H marrying Stephanie.
Yeah, you're right. The birth of Stephanie, Triple H marrying Stephanie, birth of Shane, buying WCW, marrying Linda. That's how his hierarchy
Yeah, that sounds right. That's right, dude.
But so just imagine, though, getting to go out there and just gloat. Just gloat on live national television about putting your competition out of business. He probably felt so good. And then all of a sudden, in Panama City Beach, Florida, we see one Shane McMahon, who at the time is in a rivalry with his dad, going into a street fight at WrestleMania 17, and he walks into Nitro, on Nitro, and claims that he has purchased WCW. Of course, that was kayfabe, but I mean, it was for the storyline, but I just can't even imagine how Shane McMahon felt walking into the WCW building that night and all those wrestlers looking at him like, holy shit, the McMahons have bought us out. Can you even imagine the faces on the WCW wrestlers?
No. Dude, no. That I bet they, if I was a wrestler, which I will never even come close to being in my life.
Yes.
And I was, the boss from the other company came in. I would be like, are we being worked right now? Right. Did we just sign Shane? Like, is Shane signed to WCW? What's going on right now?
They were probably so confused because I know they're all kept in the dark about it. And Shane McMahon says he buys WCW, and there's where it all starts. That's where the invasion starts to take place on that simulcast where Shane bought WCW from under his father's nose. And I remember watching that live and Shane being like, the contract does read McMahon, but Shane McMahon. And I was like, holy shit, here we go. And then throughout like the rest of the weeks, there were several run-ins and appearances from WCW superstars on Raw and SmackDown over the months after WrestleMania. I remember, I think the first one I actually remember seeing, the first guy I remember being like, who is that? And then they're talking about, that's Booker T. You know, it was Jim Ross, you know, saying, that's Booker T from WCW. He's the WCW champion. What is he doing? He put Stone Cold through the announce table and broke three of Stone Cold's ribs that night. And
right.
In real life. Which I know Book personally, obviously, and I know that I'm sure he hated that happened to him on his first night in the company.
I can't imagine, dude. I mean, that's actually worst case scenario.
That's probably the worst thing that probably could have happened. And so all these WCW guys start coming in, and like I said, I didn't know the WCW talent that well. So what did you, a WCW guy and seeing these guys come in, what was going through your head?
Okay, well, like I said, I definitely had made the jump to WWF, and looking back on the people that came over, like I wasn't familiar with the large majority of them. Booker T being an exception because of the fact that he was main event in WCW, and the night he won the title was that night that Russo and Hogan had that shoot. So I was really like. I was very aware of Booker T because of that.
And Harlem Heat, one of the greatest tag teams of all time.
For sure. But Booker, I think, was far and away the A-lister, with DDP being, pretty much on the same level, but not used nearly as well as Booker was.
Yeah.
But really, to speak of, like, there was no Goldberg, there was no Steiner, there was no Hogan, there was no Flair, there was no WCW franchises.
Yeah. It wasn't like, here's the thing. I know, like, for many fans, I'm sure, who were longtime fans of WCW and WWE, it's like everyone's probably waiting for that moment of getting to see all the dream matches they always wanted to see and talk about, Because, I mean, essentially, it's like, wow, I get to finally see my two favorite teams and essentially, finally go one-on-one on the same field. And I'm sure people were just freaking out. And they're like, yes, finally we get to see, Sting versus The Undertaker, which we still might maybe eventually see. You never know if Sting has his way with it.
Yeah.
But, all these things going on. And then, when the roster came in, I mean, now looking back, if I were Vince, the guys I would have wanted to come from WCW, were two of them you mentioned, I would want Booker T.
Yeah.
I'd want Diamond Dallas Page. I'd want Sting, and I'd want Goldberg, they eventually, now they've gotten all those guys, but at the time, they just had Booker and they just had DDP, which are the two biggest stars they had come over from WCW, and you're right, and DDP will tell you himself, I mean, he wasn't really utilized properly in WWF, so really the main guy was Booker T. Booker T was the main guy. I mean, from WCW. He was team WCW. Now, this is all going down, though, in March of 2001. The very next month, literally in April, the third biggest at the time, which I guess when WCW was bought, became the second biggest wrestling company in the United States, Extreme Championship Wrestling, ECW, went out of business. They went bankrupt. And WWE bought ECW. I mean, who would have thought the two top organizations would go out of business a month away from each other?
Right. Yeah.
Just an incredible time.
the timing is almost uncanny, honestly.
It's crazy. And I know Paul Heyman because I recently watched his documentary. And it, have you seen the Paul Heyman doc?
I have not. I know they're going to put it on the network, so I'm just going to have to wait.
It's so amazing. It's so amazing.
That's what I heard. It's hard, hard to wait.
I was watching it, and you know, Paul Heyman actually debuted on WWF television while ECW was still in business. While he was still the owner, of ECW, he was on WWE television as the commentator, replacing Jerry the King Lawler for that period, which I just find ridiculously crazy. Yeah. And, you know, he didn't tell anybody except for Tommy Dreamer that he was going over to the WWE, which to me is just insane. I'm sure all the ECW guys were like, what the hell is going on? I'm sure all the ECW guys were like, I don't even know what the hell's happening now. But they both go out of business. And I didn't know anything about ECW except for, I didn't know anything about ECW at this point in life. I had no idea.
Oh, really? So you had no idea? Okay.
No, I knew the name. That's all I knew. I knew there was another company named ECW, and I bought one of their video games, and it was shitty. That's all I remember.
Yeah.
I remember, like,
terrible video games.
I remember not knowing anything. I remember trying to I bought it at Toys R Us. I think it was ECW Hardcore Revolution or something like that.
Yeah.
And I tried it for the N64, and I tried to take it back to Toys R Us, and not even they wouldn't even accept it back. Like, no.
Yeah, no.
You bought that shit. You got to keep that one, brother.
That one's yours.
But anyway, so I had no idea about ECW, except every now and then I'd hear Paul Heyman say, you know, and the E is for extreme, you know, when he's talking about Paulie Dangerously. So
Right, yeah.
but in storyline, Stephanie McMahon is the owner of ECW.
Right.
Which to me, retrospectively looking at it, is insane that she's the owner. Like,
for real.
Furthest thing from ECW. And I remember, like,
furthest thing.
I remember at this time, you know, she came out. She was, like, wearing, like those hats that Triple H used to wear, like, backward. I don't even know what those hats are called.
Oh, yeah. No, those hats are terrible.
Like the LL Cool J Kangol style hat, you know, but like, turned backward.
Leather.
Like, though.
Leather.
Black leather. I remember she was wearing that, trying to be ECW, you know?
Oh, God.
And right now, Stephanie's arguably the top heel in the world right now, like, on the microphone.
She's brilliant now.
But back then, I wouldn't buy Stephanie as, like, an ECW girl. I mean, she's the billion-dollar princess.
Not.
So, I mean, these things keep happening, you know, and but at this time, you got to think, this is 2001, and it was fresh off of WrestleMania, where Stone Cold actually turned heel against Vince. But the weird thing was, when this whole storyline started happening, he was still a heel, but he was still a WWF champion, but he was still a heel and a part of the WWF, and he was, like, on the WWF team originally. And I was so confused by all of that. Very, very weird stuff. And so he was trying to partner with McMahon because, remember, they were the both heels. So let me ask, so the thing that I found confusing now looking back at this is WWE in this situation is the babyface organization.
Right.
And the alliance were the heels. So that, I guess, was supposed to turn everybody in WWF babyface? Is that how that was supposed to work?
You know, that's a great question, because I don't know, because obviously, though the Alliance was booked as heels, RVD was getting face pops, like, every time he came out.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, Austin was supposed to be heel at this point, but he was getting face pops.
Because he's Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know.
But, dude, you know, it's hard to say. Like, I don't know if everybody in WWF was supposed to be babyface, but what happened was, you know, you had people thrown together on teams as a singular unit, and you have faces with heels, and everything's just completely out of whack, dude.
I mean, so, like, I'm sure everyone was confused, like, the viewers, the wrestlers, even by Vince and Stephanie and Shane, like, how all that was supposed to work, because it was just like,
right, yeah.
Everyone, like, I mean, because essentially, like, they're trying to turn everyone in WWE face and everyone in WCW, ECW heel. But then there was an inner working. It was like WWE as a whole was a face. I'm trying to explain this. As a whole was a face, and all the wrestlers were faces, but inside of the face organization, there were faces and heels. You know what I mean?
Right. Like,
It's just super confusing. So I remember going into the first pay-per-view they had after after this was WWF Invasion 2001, mm-hmm. which was originally supposed to be Fully Loaded 2001, but they changed it to Invasion. And I pulled up the match card here because it's just funny to look back at this. So they had all WWF guys going against ECW or WCW guys. So I just want to read off these and just we'll talk about a few of them, but I just want to go off real quick. The opening match, Chavo Guerrero Jr. representing WCW defeated Scotty Too Hotty representing WWE. Edge and Christian representing WWE faced Lance Storm and Mike Awesome in a tag match. Nothing at stake. I don't remember the match, but you know, I don't really care about it. Yawn, even though I like Edge and Christian.
Now, I will say at the time that like knowing what Lance Storm was to ECW, what Mike Awesome was to ECW, though he tarnished that with his time in WCW, I think that's pretty cool. Like, you know, that's not dream match, but that's something like, yeah, I want to see that. You know?
Yeah, okay, I'll go with you on that one. Okay, but here's the one, to me, the best match. The best match on this card. The third match was a singles match with Mick Foley as the special guest referee, and it pit Earl Hebner representing the WWF against Nick Patrick representing WCW in a wrestling match, wearing their referee uniforms, by the way.
Oh yeah, you know, this is it, guys. We have WCW versus WWF. Finally,
so
this is what everybody wants.
Let's put the two like most known referees from each company in the ring and have a match against each other with Mick Foley as the guest referee, which I guess was okay because he was in all three companies, so I guess it made sense. But whoa, like what in the world? Why is Earl Hebner?
Waste of time.
Complete waste of time. The next one was the APA. Farouk and Bradshaw defeated the Natural Born Thrillers, Sean O'Hare and Chuck Palumbo.
Boo.
Billy Kidman.
Mega fucking boo.
Billy Kidman, which I think at the time was the WCW Cruiserweight Champion, defeated X-Pac, who was the WWF Light Heavyweight Champion. I remember liking that match. But, you know, I guess it was the two, like, Cruiserweight guys going at it. It's funny how we don't say light heavyweight at all anymore.
At all. Like a heavyweight everything.
I forget that was even a title. The light heavyweight championship. I forgot that was a championship until I read this.
Nothing ever in its entire existence happened notable with the light heavyweight championship in WWF.
Except Christian won it in his debut in WWF. I'm just going to put that out there.
Fair enough.
The next match was Raven representing ECW defeated William Regal. Seven was a six-man tag team match that saw Chris Kanyon, Sean Stasiak, and Hugh Morris against Billy Gunn, Big Show, and Albert.
That's the worst thing ever.
Like, these are the matches. These are the dream matches we've been waiting on.
Just that whole cast of characters is just like, let's throw all the D-listers out there, dude.
Let's throw them all out there in one match. Let's put Hugh Morris, Chris Kanyon, and Sean Stasiak. The next match, Tajiri, representing the WWF, defeated Taz, representing ECW. Whatever.
See, even when you said that, I was like, Tajiri is the ECW guy until you told me Taz.
Yeah, exactly.
Which shows I don't remember any of his WWF shit, at least not at that time period, and I still associate him with the ECW.
Yeah, I associate Tajiri with ECW as well. The next one, a hardcore match for the WWF Hardcore Championship, Rob Van Dam representing ECW defeated Jeff Hardy, who was the champion at the time.
That's actually dope. That's actually really dope.
That's pretty fly. I like that. I like that match.
That's what the pay-per-view should have been about. It's shit like that.
Yeah, I like that one. The next one I'm actually a huge fan of. It was Trish Stratus and Lita representing WWF defeated Tori Wilson and Stacy Keibler representing WCW in a bra and panties match with Mick Foley once again as the special guest referee.
Mick Foley should have been the guy that bought ECW. That's what they should have done.
That would have been pretty
cool.
I like that match. I'm not mad at that one.
Yeah, as far as women's go, I mean, yeah, that's how you do it.
I mean, bra and panties, man? Come on now. Hey, man, I'm cool with that. And then the main event of the evening, the Alliance, which was Booker T, Diamond Dallas Page representing WCW, and Rhino and the Dudley Boys, Bubba Ray and D-Von representing ECW, went against Team WWF, which was Steve Austin, Kurt Angle, Chris Jericho, The Undertaker, and Kane.
Okay.
Now, that's a match.
That is a match. That is a match. You know, I really, it makes sense. It makes perfect sense. I hate that the Dudley Boys were made ECW, even though, I mean, I know that, like, everything about it checks out. I don't know, though. I just wish that that could have been filled with people that were not on WWF TV leading up to this point.
I see what you're saying, that the fact that they, like, they went, I mean, even with Taz and stuff like that, I mean, they were guys who were...
Yeah, it's like, dude, they've been on WWF TV for years now, you know, like, they're switching because of their past alliances, but it's not fresh for the viewer.
Exactly.
But with that said, it makes sense, and that those are both pretty awesome teams.
I mean, yeah, they're pretty awesome teams, and now in this match, the reason I wanted to bring up this whole card is because in this match, which went 30 minutes long, by the way, according to Wikipedia, Team WWF lost the inaugural, and this was called like the inaugural brawl match, I think is what it was called. And Steve Austin, actually, who was currently a heel, Steve Austin, who was a heel in the babyface organization, turned healer, yeah, and went against WWE and joined the Alliance. Thoughts on Steve Austin's turn?
Boo. Like, turn, dude, come on. Yeah, more turn. Jumping ship.
Yeah.
I mean, grasping at straws at this point. You know, that's just like, oh, are you serious? Like, just buy Goldberg out of his contract, keep Austin on WWF, and have Austin versus Goldberg. Oh, my God, amazing.
Oh, man, Austin versus Goldberg would have been cool. Oh, that would have been so cool.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that he jumped ship just shows that, like, it just shows how weak everything was getting to me, you know, like that. There's no, in no universe is that a good move to me.
Yeah, yeah. Now this is where it starts to, because this was like just in like April or May when this happened, and
right.
We're going for months. This storyline took up the majority of 2001, which we kind of look back on as the last of the Attitude Era, and
yeah.
Now that I'm looking at it, really to me. Did WrestleMania 17, was that marking the end of the Attitude Era?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. With 18 kind of being in a weird place because WrestleMania 19, the main event was Brock and Angle. And that to me screams like the Ruthless Aggression Era. So, yeah. And it was the, you know, Attitude Era ended, officially ended in my eyes with Rock Austin 3 at 19.
Okay, that was like the final hurrah of the Attitude Era.
But the official.
Yeah, I guess the most part kind of dwindled down after WrestleMania 17. And I remember the next night on television, you know, The Rock lost, obviously, to Austin at 17. And I remember, like, I think it was McMahon or somebody suspended The Rock indefinitely. And I remember having to ask my mother at the time, what does indefinitely mean? And she was like, a long time, son, a long time. And that was when The Rock left to go film The Scorpion King.
Right.
And, you know, his Oscar-winning performance in that movie, by the way. That's when he went to go film The Scorpion King. And I just remember, like, they finally, The Rock came back. I can't believe I just said that. Finally, The Rock came back to WWF. And I remember it was like a whole thing of, like, Where will the Rock's loyalties lie? Will he be Team WWF or will he join the Alliance? Which to me is a stupid effing question. Why would the Rock join the Alliance at all? He's never been.
He has no connection.
He was the first WWE like developmental star. Like, I mean, he's only been in WWE his whole career. I mean, why would he go over to the Alliance? I mean, it made no sense at all. And I remember they were all in the ring. It was Shane and Stephanie. And Vince and The Rock. And I remember they were like, okay, what's going to happen? You know, we don't know. And then The Rock bottoms Vince McMahon. And I remember for a second being like, shit, The Rock's turning. Shit. And then he ends up rock bottoming Shane too. And I don't know what he did to Stephanie. And then he said, finally, The Rock has come back, ... to the WWF.
And that's awesome.
To me, though, that was an awesome thing to happen, because it was right before SummerSlam. WWF, really, their top star, I mean, on Team WWF was Chris Jericho. Not taking anything away from him, but he isn't and never has been to the caliber of Stone Cold Steve Austin. You know, so
no.
There weren't really any big WWE stars at this point on Team WWF. So I was excited for The Rock to come back, and I think also at this point Kurt Angle may have jumped almost. Angle was trying to get a WWE title shot against Austin, and there was I think Angle turned after SummerSlam, but leading up into SummerSlam, I remember it was The Rock versus Booker T for the WCW Championship.
Right.
And it was and that's right. And it was Angle and Austin for the WWF Championship, and that night The Rock became the WCW champion. Which was crazy. You know, I think. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because this whole era is so crazy and confusing to me that I don't even get it
so
anymore.
Confusing.
Now, did Booker, and I should know this, but Booker T, when he came in, was WCW champion. And then wasn't he beaten by, like, Angle or Jericho for the title and then won it back? And that's when he became five-time champion?
No, he was five-time by the time he came over, wasn't he?
I don't know. I don't remember, because I remember him losing the WCW title and then gaining it back at some point in WWE.
Okay. I gotcha. You know, I honestly don't know off the top of my head, man.
Okay. Well, I think that's what happened, and I remember The Rock became the first WWF guy to be the WCW champion. Now, to me, if you look up on WWE.com, the official lineage of the WCW title, it counts all the people in WWF who won it. But to me, don't you think, though, Booker is really the last WCW champion? I mean, when you think of The Rock, do you think former WCW champion, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson?
Booker definitely has, in my eyes, he has that distinction, and he deserves that distinction.
Yeah.
Once the big gold came over, it was the World Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah.
WWE's World Heavyweight Championship.
But
that's how I feel.
While we're talking about that title belt, I mean, to me, and I've said this before, that's my favorite championship belt of all time. Big gold belt is just it's an amazing title, because it's just like not only like the lineage that it carries, it just when you close your eyes and someone says, "All right, think of a championship wrestling belt." That's the first thing that pops in my mind. And I'm sure that'd be like the first thing that pops into casual fans from back in the day's mind. That just to me is the title. Go ahead.
I'm just saying, visually, it's like it's definitely the best looking. It looks the most like a world heavyweight. It has so much prestige in its visual presence.
And I mean, the shape is unique. It's distinct.
Yeah.
It's big. It's gold. I mean, that's why they call it Big Gold Belt. I mean, it's just to me, and it's a beautiful championship belt. I love that title more than anything. What do you think about the new WWE title?
I don't hate it by any means, but I mean it's not a classic like the big gold belt.
Oh yeah, but I don't expect it to be. But you know, I kind of like the new WWE logo. It's growing on me already.
Yeah, no, I have no problem with it either.
Yeah, it's already growing on me. I kind of like it. I know we're straying off from the topic, but did you see like the first Raw with like the new logo and everything and all that. I mean, it was cool. I liked how it looked. It was different. You know, it was nice to see like a change. I think that was really, really, we were talking about WrestleMania 17. I think that was kind of the full distinction. All right, we're done with that era of wrestling. We're not the Attitude Era anymore. We don't have the Scratch logo anymore. We are a new WWE, and it's a very 2014 looking logo. You know what I mean? Very like iPod, Google looking.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and you know, I didn't even think about that until you said it, but yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so moving right along, though. We're just going, I mean, this whole thing, though, to me, just kind of sucked.
It did.
The whole
it did.
Invasion just kind of
because,
sucked.
You know, and I mean, what was the issue? I mean, I know that these guys, you know, they had these lucrative-ass contracts from WCW or, you know, Ted Turner, Time Warner, and they were getting paid to not work.
Yes.
But, I mean, I don't know if it was out of, you know, out of question for Vince financially to buy these dudes out, but this seems like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that may have been worth it, you know?
I mean, it would have made television, you know, history. I mean, it would have been, like, the most memorable moments of all time, I think.
But and isn't Invasion one of the most purchased pay-per-views of all time?
Yeah, it's way up there in the buy rate. Like, it's just, like, because people wanted to see it. I mean, and when you look back at the card, you're like, oh, man, that sucks. But at the time, I'm not exactly sure, but I think this is how it worked. When WCW went under, pretty much everybody under contract with WCW had another year on their deal. They had, right. You know, because I know Booker had another year, Sting, Goldberg, DDP, they all had another a full year on their WCW deal. So they could sit home. And I talked to Booker about this. Book said, I could have sat home for a year and collected a paycheck and not done anything. You know, and there wouldn't have been anything wrong with that if he did. I'd have been like, all right, that's smart. You get a year off
to get
paid for it.
Recover any damage that's been done before, yeah.
But he was like, man, I just want to make that switch. So, I mean, I think he had to dissolve that deal with WCW and sign a new one with WWE.
Right.
I think he was just like a choice that everyone was given. And I think guys like DDP and guys like Booker were like, hey, we're still at the peak of our career, especially Booker T was at the peak of his career.
Oh, for sure.
Just you know, a year before became like the big main event guy for WCW. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he made the smartest choice ever. Let me go to WWE while I'm hot. You know, Sting and Goldberg were two of the guys who they didn't get. And, you know, of course they got Goldberg after his year went out on his contract with WCW. Mm-hmm. Which we all look back so fondly, the Bill Goldberg days in WWE. But I just think there were so many things that just weren't good about the Invasion. Starting with the lack of talent. You mean Booker, as talented as a man and as entertaining of a performer as he is on the mic, in stage, and in the ring, you know, he couldn't carry WCW, ECW by himself. No one could. And, you know, he essentially was carrying WCW, though, by himself, but he couldn't carry the team aspect in WWE. He alone he needed more stars of his magnitude in the organization to be able to have a legitimate chance, I guess, against WWE, who had Austin, Rock, Angle, Jericho, you know, Kane, Undertaker, you know, I mean, top guys. And I think that's why they went and tried to have, all right, we're going to put Austin with WCW, ECW. We're going to put Angle with WCW, ECW. And it was just like, to me, that was the big problem. And then it seemed like the whole storyline wasn't really WCW and ECW invading. It was Stephanie and Shane trying to upshow their dad.
Right, which is what the storyline, you know, that's what it came down to, was just another McMahon storyline.
Which was the only thing that was really going on in wrestling for like 2 or 3 years was just storylines, which, you know, gave us some of the greatest moments of all time. Don't get me wrong. But this wasn't really a WCW invading and ECW invading as much as it was, hey, Dad, we want to prove that we're just as good as you. Storyline.
Right.
I think that's where it suffered a lot.
For sure. I mean, yeah, that was the heaviness of the McMahon element was, I mean, it was probably too much. And I'm not saying they ruined it by any means, but I'm saying it was probably a little bit too much. And then, you know, the lack of star power was also crippling. Like, that can't be said enough. But there's a litany of problems, you know, Austin and Angle jumping ship. Now, let's say that they were given the cards that they were dealt, which is the lack of star power that they were given.
Yeah.
How could they have avoided having someone like Austin and someone like Angle jump ship? Do you think there was any remedy for that, or they had to do that?
I don't know. See, I would have hated to have been the creative team back in that day, because they were losing their mind, because they had all these plans probably laid out for the rest of the year, and then they buy WCW and ECW, and then everything just gets shaken up completely. I don't know, because, you know, like I said, now here's the thing. If they went in, Booker T was the guy, and they didn't book DDP like they booked him, If they would have booked DDP differently, not the stalker of Undertaker's wife Sarah angle.
No, terrible.
He could have been. I'll say this. I would have bought Diamond Dallas Page. What I would have done, this is how, all right, I'm fantasy booking right now. This is what I'm doing. Okay, so you right now you have Booker as the WCW champion, Austin as the WWF champion, and if the teams were led by Austin Rock versus Booker DDP, and then at some point Booker DDP were both the WWF and WCW champions, and it was just kind of going back and forth. Because to me, a perfect opponent for DDP would have been The Rock. It'd have been People's Champion versus People's Champion. And that would have been awesome. And Booker Stone Cold, that's an automatic feud. And then when they had their feud done, then Booker and Rock, that makes sense. And then DDP Austin, DDP drops the belt finally back to Austin, and then Rock becomes WCW champion. And then and that could have kind of how, like, then that could have been the way that they defeated WCW ECW finally. If you would have put emphasis on those four guys, Austin and Rock reluctantly worked together, so you could build potential suspense in that angle, because you're like, okay, well, Rock and Austin need to get together or WWF's going to go out of business if they can't get along. And then, you know, that could have been an interesting thing. And leave the McMahons on the perimeter. I'm not saying leave them out of the storyline. Have a more perimeter characters where Vince is trying to convince Rock and Austin to work as a team. And Shane and Stephanie just love that Booker and DDP are, you know, winning everything and killing it. Because to me, that would have been a good way to make WCW seem like a legitimate competitor if they had both world titles.
For sure. For that, Brad, that was actually really fucking good.
I don't know. I just came out that boom off the top of my head.
Yeah, the booking of DDP was so mishandled, because you're exactly right. DDP should have been treated like, I don't know what it was, because I even had a main event where I think it was The Rock against Booker T and Shane, as if to suggest Booker T couldn't take The Rock by himself.
Yeah.
At one pay-per-views, and that was the problem. They booked these guys weaker. Like, it was just like this big ego stroking thing to have the WWF guys be like these superior athletes, and well, that's not the way it should have been.
No, I agree completely. And I'll say two things about that. Is one, that's like the longest outstanding rumor about why Sting never came over to WWF, because Sting stated in an interview or something, the first time, you know, he turned on WWE after WCW went out of business, it was Booker T making his debut on Raw, and The Rock, not Booker T making his debut, but The Rock and Booker T's first meeting with one another on WWE programming, and The Rock being, you know, Booker T talking, and Rock being, who the hell are you? Who in the blue hell are you? You know what I mean? And it was the way, and to Sting, he was like, that immediately discredited everything WCW ever did in that one sentence by The Rock.
That's such a good point, though. Yeah. That's such an excellent point, dude. Like, Booker T and DDP should have been winning clean. You know, they should have been winning titles clean. And another thing, they should have had Rob Van Dam with the ECW championship going against people like Jericho.
That would have been awesome. Walt, that would have been awesome, yeah. See, and that's what they should have done, and you know, and they didn't do that. And then the other thing, though, if you remember, they for a second on one episode of Monday Night Raw, the last 15 minutes of the program, or last 20 minutes or something like that, was a WCW show. They changed the logos, they changed the commentators, they changed the announcers, the referees, and it was a WCW show, which the main event was for the WCW championship, I believe, Booker T versus Buff Bagwell. And the infamous match where I think Bagwell was either on something or wasn't in his right mind. Maybe he had a bad day. I don't know what was going on. And Booker T tried his best to make this match work. And it was just one of the worst matches, you know, at the time. I mean, people still talk about it all the time, how bad of a match it was.
Yeah.
The main event of Raw. And what I heard the plan was Vince was going to give the WCW brand. He was going to make a separate brand for WCW. So there had been a WCW show and a WWF show. Almost like how he did with Raw and SmackDown a year later.
Or
later that year, rather. And he was going to give Monday Night Raw to WCW. And it had been WCW Raw on Mondays and WWF SmackDown on Thursdays. And once he saw how that main event went between Booker and Bagwell, he was like, all right, nope. not doing that. And that's from what I read and what I've heard. And
yeah, I've heard that as well.
Just like, imagine that. Imagine if Vince gave Raw to WCW. I mean, that could have also been pretty cool to have two different shows in a way to create cross competition that way, the same way they did with Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah, yeah. And it would have made it things like, you know, WrestleMania. It's like, you know, like they had the SmackDown Raw matches. Like there was a time when those would only occur at like WrestleManias and stuff like that.
Yeah, the promotional like, matches, yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah. So that would have been really cool. I mean, giving WCW Raw seems insane to me.
Oh, like, yeah, I would give him SmackDown.
For sure. But yeah, no, apparently that match was just god awful. But again, like, why Bagwell? Bagwell never competed for the WCW championship in WCW.
Yeah, it was strange. And, you know, and then I think that was when the infamous thing where JR was still head of talent relations and Buff Bagwell's mother called up to Jim Ross saying he was sick and couldn't make it to the show.
Yeah.
And then JR was like, well, yeah, he doesn't have to make it to any other show ever again. So you're fired, pretty much.
Oh, God. That is like the most embarrassing way to go out.
Yeah, I know. Oh, my God. Like, that's like just like such a middle school thing of like your mom calling your teacher saying, oh, you know, Kyle's sick today. He can't make it in.
Yeah.
All right, well, send the note.
That's terrible.
It's just like,
yeah.
It was just a lot of bad things happening for WCW. And finally, at Survivor Series 2001 was the final pay-per-view in the Invasion angle. And I'm going to read out this match card and see if it got any better from the first one to the last one. We had a 6-man tag team match, which saw Lance Storm, Just Incredible, and Raven representing the Alliance. I'm not mad at. Versus,
no, that's a good ECW team.
Versus Big Daddy V. Albert, Scotty Too Hotty, and Spike Dudley representing WWF.
God, that made me sick to my stomach.
All right. Next up, we had a singles match for the WWF European Championship. Christian representing the Alliance. Well, there's another guy who was never WCW or ECW representing the WCW-ECW. Defeated Al Snow, who representing the WWF, who was an ECW guy. Like, I mean, it just didn't make any sense where some of these guys had their
allegiance. Yeah, that's...
Then we had William Regal representing the Alliance, defeated Tajiri with Torrey Wilson, representing WWF.
Okay.
Which all those people were originally not from WWF. Then we had a title unification match for the WCW United States Championship and the Intercontinental Championship, which I hope they do today. I mean, in this generation, I hope they do those two titles together. We had the WCW United States Champion Edge representing the WWF, defeating the WWF Intercontinental Champion Test representing the Alliance, and he merged those two championships. Next up, we had a steel cage title unification match for the WCW and WWF Tag Team Championships. We had the WCW Tag Champs, the Dudley Boys, taking on was Stacy Keibler, taking on the WWF champion Tag Team Champions, the Hardy Boys, which
I'm sure that was a good match.
Yeah,
but again, storyline wise, it's like, you dudes, y'all WWF, okay?
I know.
We've seen all the TLC matches.
It's
watched this.
Yeah. Then a immunity battle royal, which featured, which the winner would be immune from getting fired no matter what team ended up winning in the final Survivor Series match, which we'll get to. The battle royal included Sean Stasiak, The Hurricane, Perry Saturn, Farouk, DDP. DDP's only shot at this whole show was in a battle royal. That's ridiculous.
That's terrible.
DDP, Chuck Palumbo, Just Incredible, Funaki, Raven, Hugh Morris, Chavo Guerrero, Tommy Dreamer, Crash Holly, Spike Dudley, Stevie Richards, Taz, Albert, Billy Kidman, Lance Storm, Bradshaw, Billy Gunn, and the winner was Test. You talk about a C-list battle royal, D-list battle royal, with the exclusion DDP and the APA, really, are the only people I'll leave out of that. Because the APA, to me, was super over.
No, you're not going to put Chuck Palumbo on that list?
No, Chuck Palumbo does not get on that list. Neither does Funaki, Perry Saturn. And no disrespect to the Hurricane. I've met the guy, and he's awesome. But, you know, at the time, he was representing the Alliance, and, well, whatever. So Test won that last, eliminating Billy Gunn, Who I'll put Billy Gunn up there as a top guy. Never a main eventer, but a high mid-carder.
Definitely a name. Definitely a name.
And then the next match, a six-pack challenge for the WWF Women's Championship. Trish Stratus defeated Lita, Jacqueline, Molly Holly, or Mighty Molly, Jazz, and Ivory. Jazz and Ivory.
Those are all WWF, huh?
No, Mighty Molly, Jazz, and Ivory represented the Alliance.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why, though. who knows? I've given up at this point, Kyle Hubbard. Do you think? I can't describe this.
I think they had given up at this point also.
I think they had, too. I think they were ready for this to be over. And then the final match is a 5-on-5 Survivor Series tag team elimination match. Whoever lost would have to go out of business, would be forced to go out of business. Team WWF, which was The Rock, Chris Jericho, Undertaker, Kane, and Big Show, defeated Steve Austin, Rob Van Dam, Kurt Angle, Booker T, and Shane McMahon. Which is a match that almost went an hour, by the way.
Can you give me the Alliance one more time? Give me the team.
Steve Austin, RVD, Kurt Angle, Booker T, and Shane O'Mac.
Okay, well, you know, I bet this match, I've actually heard this match is amazing.
I haven't watched it in forever. I did watch it right when the WWE Network came out, but I like, it was one of those things where I was halfway asleep when I was watching it.
I can't tell you how many matches I fall asleep to. But I've heard really good things about this match, and I'm going to watch it tonight. But with the exception of RVD and Booker T, like, you could have had all these people in this main event of Survivor Series the year before.
Yeah. I mean, it was the same guys. I mean, take out Shane McMahon and put in Diamond Dallas Page. Jeez.
Seriously, that's a no-brainer. That's a no-brainer.
A three-time WCW champion is in a battle royal? Like, are you serious right now?
What was their thinking behind that? Could DDP not go anymore? Like, what was the deal?
No, he was still in top physical condition, and I think he ended up being a European champion.
yeah, he did, but, man, that was so stupid. I can't get over how stupid that is.
And I've talked to DDP, and y'all can listen to it on the Brad Gilmore Show. It was an episode where we gave away some DDP yoga. He answered fan questions, and they asked, someone asked him, talk about how do you feel about your time in WWF? He was just like, I was there. pretty much. He was there. He got a mania under his belt against Christian for the European Championship, and he won. I mean, but definitely not the best time for DDP, I would say, in his career. I mean, he's a three-time WCW champion, and he's a stalker and in a battle royal and a European
champion. This whole time period would have benefited greatly by DDP being used better. Even if that was the only thing that was different, it would still be such a huge improvement.
It would drastically, I think, change a lot of things, in my opinion, in this whole storyline. And you got to think, for a large part of this storyline, Steve Austin was a heel, which didn't work, as we all know. The Rock was out, until August, which is a pretty big time period from March to August. And then Triple H was out with an injury.
Right.
So, I mean, you had the three top guys, like, not there. I mean, Austin was there the whole time, but as a heel. I mean, if Triple H were there, let's think about this, Kyle. If Triple H was there, how do you think that would have affected everything?
Man, that's a really good question. He would probably be Alliance, don't you think? That would be a logical thing, at least in the
for Stephanie
terms of kayfabe.
I don't know. Even if he were Alliance, I mean, he was in WCW before. I mean, that would have made sense, I guess. And, he's married to Stephanie. Maybe that would have made sense better.
Yeah.
And maybe if Triple H was there, they wouldn't have to have so many guys join the Alliance. I don't know.
Yeah, it's really hard to gauge what Triple H's contribution to the whole thing would be. I mean, it's just not as, like, it wouldn't be like adding a Hulk Hogan or a Goldberg to the mix. I don't think things would have worked out that drastically different had Triple H been there.
And here's another thing that I didn't get or like. After the whole invasion angle happened, this is something I did like. This is when they were like, okay, we have all this talent. We're going to spread them out into two shows. And this was the aftermath of the whole invasion and buying up the competition. they made competition within themselves. And I remember on a Monday Night Raw episode, all of a sudden, a guy who I'm only have heard about at this point and never seen really that much except in clips. And when I would switch back and forth from WCW, Ric Flair makes his return to the WWF after like an 8-year hiatus, you know, in WCW. And while Vince is cutting a promo and claims that he was the consortium that Stephanie and Shane sold all their stock in WWF to when they bought WCW and ECW, which for once I appreciated the continuity that WWF had in a storyline that made sense. So they sold their stock to Ric Flair, and Ric Flair was co-owner of the WWF. How'd you feel about that?
I like that, actually. I think, you know, that was actually really well done. I love the brand split. I love the way it happened. And it's a good role for Flair, for sure.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's been there ever since. Well, I guess TNA excluded.
Right, yeah.
Which we all would like to forget.
Look, trust me, the things that came after the initial invasion have things that the initial invasion was lacking.
Yeah.
Like Ric Flair being a big, big component of that. And like the power struggle between a WCW guy, you know, in quotes, because at this point WCW is a non-factor. But still, the power struggle between him and Vince was enjoyable, especially compared to the whole McMahon power struggle that we've seen so many times.
If Flair came in and was the owner of WCW, say that he bought WCW and then he led the invasion, it would, I think that would also contributed to it a lot. I think that would have been
Yeah.
And then shortly after, a few months after that, actually, maybe, see, after Survivor Series, maybe like three, four months afterward, when Vince was getting sick and tired of Ric Flair always, you know, butting heads, you know, in the corporate offices, McMahon decides to inject a lethal dose of poison. Poison. In the NWO, and we saw Hulk Hogan, Razor Ramon, and Big Daddy Diesel, also known as Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, make their WWF returns at No Way Out 2002.
This sounds like a good invasion angle right now.
Now we're talking. Now we're talking. They're getting it right afterward. Start with Flair saying he owns WCW. Bring in the NWO. And then you bring in all the other WCW guys. And then you start doing the invasion. Don't jump the gun with just Booker and DDP. They can't carry the company by themselves. You need a figurehead, and you need three huge stars like Hogan, Hall, and Nash. And then imagine this one. Imagine Rock, Austin, Triple H, Undertaker, and Kane, or Undertaker and Kurt Angle facing Hogan, Hall, Nash, Booker, and DDP. Now we're talking.
That's the angle. That's the invasion.
Jesus. I wish they could have done that. That would have been awesome.
That would have been amazing.
We never got that proper Hogan-Austin match.
No, never. And think about the nuance they could have gone into. Like Ric Flair, like, having this like shaky partnership with the NWO. It was beautiful. So many beautiful things could have come from that.
It'd have been awesome, and you know, but it didn't happen. So, Kyle, looking back at the invasion storyline, how do you feel about it? What are your feelings toward the invasion?
Just an odd time in wrestling. Just super weird.
Let me say this. With the advent of the WWE Network, we can relive a lot of these moments now, especially all the pay-per-views. They're adding new Raws and SmackDowns all the time from that era. Would you advise someone who might be like, because you imagine, Kyle, someone who's 14 years old, 13, 14 years old, was just born when all this was happening. Do you advise a 14-year-old to go back and relive the invasion angle?
Well, they're not going to know any of the WCW guys.
Because I barely did.
Yeah, because none of those guys are ever, like, talked about their legacies or anything like that. But if you're, like, an older wrestling fan that, like, was not into it at the time, on the network they have the episode where, you know, it was announced that Vince owned – or that Shane owned WCW. That episode's on there. And the draft episode's on there. And those are both worth watching.
Definitely. So I say it's a weird period in wrestling, a very confusing period in wrestling.
It was a transitional period, you know? It's like we said, yeah. Like the 17 was like, you know, when the Attitude Era was all, you know, coming down. So it was weird, like, you know, a weird time in wrestling for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I mean, so pretty much from like once 18 happened, leading up until, I guess, 19 for WrestleMania. I mean, that 2002 to 2003 year, I think, is when they finally found focus once again and were getting back on track.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
So I look back at the Invasion fondly, but also I don't know if I'd recommend people going back and having to live through the confusion and the constant jumps and swaps that all the teams had. I'm sticking with my DDP and Booker T angle winning the world titles. That's what I'm sticking with.
Dude, I love that. I'm going to play that in a WWE 2K15. I'm going to make that happen.
We need
to. But what's the best thing that came out of the Invasion?
Booker T joining WWF. Okay. I will say that. Not just because of my close relations with him, because, I mean, he was a legitimate main event star that came over to WWF and became a main event star in WWE.
Absolutely.
And he's a WWE Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Competed with Triple H at WrestleMania 19. He had the run with the belt as King Booker. He did a lot of great things in WWE, as did the other best thing to come out of the Invasion, Mr. Rob Van Dam.
Oh, yeah. RVD, who's still with WWE today. Yeah, I definitely agree with that, too. RVD, who became WWE champion, ECW champion. Yeah, man. I mean, I agree with that, too. Two of the best.
And I want to say, but before we peel out, I do want to say that to my personal opinion, RVD was the brightest spot and the star of the Invasion. And I think without RVD, it would have been 10 times worse than it was. And it was still terrible, but he helped out a lot.
I actually found this, and I'll say this and then we'll wrap up. I found this this old VHS cassette tape that I taped of SmackDown back in that era. I like had my grandfather tape it for me because I didn't know how to work a VCR. And the main event, it was a SmackDown, and the main event was Stone Cold representing the Alliance versus Rob Van Dam representing the Alliance for the WWF title. Austin was mad. He was pissed off. You know, he was yelling at the Alliance, and he was like, "You know what? The next son of a bitch that walks through that door, I'm a fight him tonight for the title." And of course, it was RVD. And he's like, "Yeah, dude, whatever. We can fight. You know." I just remember that. It was an awesome match. So the Invasion angle, another one in the books. Kyle Hubbard, thanks for joining me, man.
Thanks for having me, bro.
All right, man. We're going to be talking more stuff here on a professional wrestling podcast covering significant events in professional wrestling. This is the Announce Table.
Oh, Brian.